Hey, Mike.
Hey, Michelle. How are things in Tennessee?
It's been a long day.
I'd like to begin by asking you a few questions about how this whole mess got started. Do you remember seeing him for the first time?
Yeah. You guys here on vacation?
Certainly are.
Welcome to the end of the world.
I'm going to have a glass of wine while we do this tonight. How are things in California?
It's 10 o'clock and you're only having your first glass of wine?
Hey, this is like my first glass of wine. Well, that's not true. I had some wine last night, like a half a glass or so. I've not had hardly any wine in weeks. I mean, like literally a couple times in weeks. I don't know.
Did you switch to whiskey or gin or something?
I didn't. I don't know what's going on with me.
All right. Well, you should.
I'm definitely going to. Long day.
Michelle, are you a football fan?
Nah, not really. I mean, I know I should be. Atlanta's going and, you know.
On September 6th, Michelle, there was one team that had more money bet on it than the Atlanta Falcons. And that team was the Cleveland Browns.
Really?
September 6th, not that long ago, is during the, you know, kind of the very, very beginning of the football season. The Cleveland Browns, who won one game this year, had more money bet on them than the Atlanta Falcons at one sports book.
Are you saying because Atlanta was so not projected to do well? Is that why?
I would never say a poorly constructed sentence like that.
Yeah,
nobody thought they'd go anywhere. In fact, there was only one team that had fewer bets on it to win the Super Bowl than the Atlanta Falcons. And who was that, Michelle?
I don't know.
The Tennessee Titans.
Titan, was it? Oh, that's sad. Don't make fun of the Tennessee Titans.
Oh, they
are. That's not nice.
Those people that did bet on the Falcons back then and on the futures bets are celebrating now.
Well,
or they will be if they win.
Do you watch it? Do you like it?
No, Michelle, let's just change the subject. I can tell you're not into it.
No, I just don't have anything to say about it. I'm completely ignorant on it.
Well,
you know, we watch a lot of college ball, but pro ball, you know, pretty much the Super Bowl.
All right, well, we're here to do the affair, Michelle, 309.
We are.
What did you think of 309?
I thought it was really, okay, I didn't like all the content in it, meaning I didn't agree with all the content, but I love how they're following Game of Thrones and series like that, where they're making their penultimate episode, like the big episode, it just kind of brings everything together. Probably mainly because I don't expect it ever. And so when they do it, I'm really kind of taken aback and kind of wooed by everything they tell us and everything that they let on and everything. So I really, really liked that about it.
Yeah,
I thought it was
very
content heavy.
That's
I'm
good
sorry,
that
yeah.
we didn't that this didn't happen in episode 10, and then we're stuck with all season off to want to ponder about what's going to happen.
No, I completely agree. Yeah, and because it gives us time to digest this information, and then come back next week and get a taste of whatever they're going to hopefully tease up for us for the next season. I think it's brilliant writing.
Well, I don't know how much there is to digest, because I don't really think a whole lot was revealed in this episode. It was interesting, though. I liked it. It was a good episode, but I don't think, you know, it wasn't like, oh my God, that's shocking new information. It's all kind of stuff we thought.
It's stuff we thought, but it's not stuff we knew. And just because, you know, to toot our own horn just a little bit, I mean, you and I had it pretty well figured out. It really kind of followed suit, right, to the things that we were thinking. I mean, you even had down Noah stabbing himself, like, almost. I don't know. I don't know that I did right at first. I mean, I kind of started coming to that conclusion, but I didn't know he was that you know, deranged. I didn't know he was that far in the first episode. They didn't really show him like that. So, I don't know.
Yeah, they can't do... I don't know. I guess I don't like that. Because Noah being psychotic washes away a lot of the need for them to really work on details and events in the plots. Like, oh, he's just crazy. That's why that happened. And right. Also, what happened to Noah in season one and two? I mean, he's dealing with his mother. That happened a long time ago in his life. Was this triggered by his time in jail or his time breaking up with two women over 3 years or whatever? That part's fuzzy.
Well, you know, Jane, our Twitter friend who we talk to sometimes, she was talking about that too and talking about Noah. And I was also talking to one of my daughters about it. And she brought up the fact that I think it was my daughter who actually brought up this fact, but she was talking about how the solitary confinement really seems to kind of break people. And maybe it was something to do with that. And then, of course, we saw in this episode that solitary confinement episode. Maybe he just couldn't run from it. She said something to the effect of it seemed like he was trying to busy himself and outrun everything up until that point. And then when he was kind of like left with nothing but his thoughts, he couldn't escape it anymore.
I live my life in solitary confinement and I'm fine.
Okay. Did you come up with a name for this episode like you did the last episode, or were we just calling it number 9?
What name did I call the last episode?
I don't remember, but you named it 308.
Oh, is that good and you don't remember it?
Well, I don't remember the name, no. But
all right, and then the on the previously ons, I think there was a little bit of a clue, Michelle, when Juliet was describing some writer, I can't remember who, but maybe it was just a way of writing. But she talked about how people in art always have a war between their conscious mind and their desire and kind of their self-control and depravity. And
right.
That's kind of the war that Noah seems to be having now.
Right, right. Yeah, I thought that was pretty telling.
All right, so it starts out part one, Helen. Helen wakes up at home. And I guess this is the same night after last week where she was sleeping with Noah. Like, it's not even a day later. It's the morning of the next day.
Right, right. It's that very next morning she wakes up. What did you think about Helen in this episode?
I like Helen. I liked her. I think she looked attractive. I think she was strong. She was thinking about going and revealing everything to everyone. And I think I don't think she got talked out of that. I think she figured that out herself not to do that.
Well, she kind of did it.
Public people like Cherry, and that would have been really stupid.
I didn't see the point of doing that. Absolutely. But we saw it from her point of view, and I really liked her in this one. She seemed, it's kind of like we've talked about this whole time, she seemed very, very driven to make up for what she had done. And we've talked about that so much, about her with Noah and why is she with Noah and why would she continue to do this and everything. And I think we got our answers with that this time. But her and Allison's conversation was really interesting to me too.
Yeah, it's the flip side of what I called the most interesting conversation of the whole series last week. It's the flip
side. Exactly.
I got some more to say about that when we come up to it, about Helen, whether what she did was smart or stupid. But, I think when people try to absolve their sins, it's very selfish. Like, I'm going to confess to everybody, it's a selfish thing to do that. Because you might do it at the cost of other people's feelings and status in life and jeopardize their freedom even, or their safety.
Yeah, that's always been one of my things, that you can only unburden yourself in as far as it doesn't put that burden on somebody else or put another burden on somebody else. Otherwise, it's not fair for you to do that just for your own peace of mind. Although Helen was so tortured that I don't really know what else she could have done.
Well, so she is just getting up in the morning. And that was that rough sex with Noah, too. That was like him being kind of animal with her.
Yeah, and I think that there was something tortured still, but more resolute, even before all of her, everything was revealed to her. She seemed more resolute. She was on a mission to maybe be better. I really got that from her. You know, we still saw, I mean, Vic left last night. You know, the cactus was still in the floor. The spaghetti was still on the table. This was last night.
Are those some Tennessee euphemisms?
What?
Cactus still on the floor. Spaghetti still on the table. What the hell does that mean? All right. Well, she does get up and goes downstairs, and the kids ask where Vic is, and she just says he's gone. And then she hauls them out to Montauk.
Yep.
Past the robot Michelle, and Scotty's picture was still there. This is like years later now, right? 3 years later. His picture was still on the ground, like they see at scenes of auto accidents, the picture of the victim.
Yeah, there was like a little memorial set up there, it looked like, still, yeah.
That's hardly believable to me.
No, that happens, that happens.
Yeah, I've know, but it stays there 3 years later, and it stays mm-hmm. there for a guy that everybody hated.
Well, that's a good point. But I mean, you know, you have to remember that his mom and his family live there and stuff. I don't know. That's I thought it was believable.
It's semi-gruesome, I think, when I see those candles and flowers and wreaths on a tree on the side of the highway. It's kind of a, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if that's how I look at it, but it, I mean, you know, people just don't want to forget the people that they loved. And I think that we go, you know, to great lengths sometimes to, I don't know. Not
to mummify people. All right. Well, she gets to Montauk at her parents' house, and they're all new agey now, Michelle. It seems like there's a lot less alcohol and fights and more yoga.
Her parents were cracking me up. First of all, I loved how they come outside and welcomed her and the kids. That's what I wanted to see when she and Noah first pulled up there in season one, episode one. And they were just so over the top, welcoming and great and loving on the kids and all that kind of stuff. But but we find out they've definitely have their ideas about things. Now,
they
I
also,
thought it was funny.
They left Helen behind to schlep in all the heavy stuff, and the kids just walked in with their light suitcases. I thought that was funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, grandparents, you know, gotta get those grandkids.
So she goes into her little room there in the house, and she finds Noah's graduation picture of him and her back in college days, I guess.
Did you notice that they had a luggage rack in that room that matched the wallpaper?
No, I had no idea of that.
Do you have a luggage rack in your house?
No.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't have a guest room in my house, though, either. If I was a millionaire with a mansion that had people coming all the time, I might have one.
You would get one and match it to the wallpaper?
Sure.
Okay.
So she finds this picture. I don't even know why. I guess just she always stayed. That was her room, I guess, in her parents' house when they went to Montauk. But they show that for some reason. Then she comes down in the kitchen and pours herself a big old water glass full of wine. Has some wine and Advil for breakfast.
That was a big water glass, too. That was big. I mean, that was like a lot of wine. That was funny.
Her first comment is, Vic left me. So she seems to be in revelatory mode with everybody.
Well, they keep on and on about Vic, though. I mean, you know, Bruce is going on about how he picked up the tab and he did it, you know, kind of underhandedly where I didn't even notice it. That's a real gentleman for you. And, you know, and Helen or Margaret's saying, I just told Bruce, you're just going to marry him, you know, and all this kind of stuff. I mean, they really kept on and on about Vic. Have him come out. We'll eat later. It doesn't matter. He can catch the 6:15. You know what? I mean, they just kept on. And here she is dealing with, I mean, you know, she left the decaying spaghetti on her table, we're assuming, to come out there to get away from this, and her parents are not allowing that. And as soon as she told them all that, then they had their revelation to her that they've been seeing a therapist and absolutely nothing in the world's her fault.
Well, her mom storm hugs her, just charges up and hugs her. And you can tell that that's probably not a big thing in the Butler family, because Helen's like, what the fuck? They probably are not huggers before this stage of their lives. She didn't expect it.
No, she didn't. And it was kind of like she kind of recoiled from it.
In horror. So she runs off to downtown to have some lunch at the Lobster Roll, Michelle. The only place in town she can go to, of course, is the Lobster Roll.
Oh, I know. I know. That's what me and Mike were talking about. It was like, you know, is this the only place to eat? She takes all the kids down there. You wouldn't think she'd want to be in there, but
she buys three pies when she knows that they're made by Cherry, too. This is all out of apology, guilt. Like blind apology, I guess. Guilt. Yep. Yeah. So this is where I thought, like, penance, this whole penance mode she's in is sometimes selfish. That it might feel sweet to get the absolution, but if it costs others as much as it might cost Helen's troop here, it really might be pretty selfish. So later on at dinner, we see the family again, and Gramps and Martin are playing chess right at the dinner table. It's kind of thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah.
But that's just advice for us to learn that Vic taught Martin chess, and Vic taught the other kid how to cook, and then the third kid, Stacy, gives away that Helen had let Noah back into the house, and that causes a whole uproar at the table.
A serious uproar.
All hell breaks loose. Helen gets railed pretty much by everyone. And this, at the cost of Stacy, the little kid who told everybody this, just kind of breaks down. And this, I think, is the trigger for Helen to admit all the truth about everything. I've got to just tell everybody what really happened. So maybe, I don't know if that's the right thing to do with this poor little kid under this pressure, being so stressed by it. But I think Helen was admitting a lot of truth in a lot of public places that she might have doled out a little bit more carefully to people.
But what do you do? You know, what do you do in that instance? Do you let the children think that their father did something that she actually did?
Maybe in time you tell the truth. She started to tell Stacy the right things, like, it's not your fault, this is my fault, you don't have to worry about it. She's not old enough to have to know the details behind that statement, that it's not her fault.
But she knows the details about her father, or she knows what details she's been told. And all the kids have very strong opinions about him because of that non-truth, that non-complete truth. And, you know, I do not agree with the way she told them, but I just don't have an answer for what she should have done. And I hate to just disagree with somebody if I don't have some way that I would have done it differently.
The answer is to tell people privately and more sectionalized, you know, individually, maybe the kids in one little group. Because she does it in front of everybody, and it all blows up with the grandparents chiming in.
Well, yes, obviously, because the way the grandparents were, what'd you think about them, like, hauling her downstairs to that panic room? That was crazy. That was so unexpected.
That was more of a panic locker than a panic room.
Well, and it locked from the outside. Panic rooms don't lock from the outside. What's the point?
Well, they didn't do very well with that panic room. Although it's kind of interesting that Helen's like, a place where men keep women as sex slaves. Or sociopaths. Anyway, they do physically. Her plan is to tell the world, to tell everybody, and they're aghast.
Yeah, she gets up from the dinner table, and she's going to go tell Cherry right there. She's like, poor Cherry, she needs to know. She's going to get up from this dinner table and go tell her.
Yeah, this whole thing was pretty clumsy. So they hustle her down the stairs into the basement, into the panic room. Like, arm, you know, you take one arm, I'll take the other, and we'll forcibly keep another adult. That was kind of wacky, I think. And then Margaret's slapping her.
I think it was wacky, but I think it was kind of made to be wacky. I don't think that it was supposed to be like a completely accurate telling of it. I think it was Helen's recount of it. And maybe sometimes we feel kind of manipulated in that way by our parents to, you know, do these kind of things. And I think it was just kind of almost a caricature, an over the top way of saying what they did, because I can't imagine that they would have physically grabbed her and pulled her down to the basement.
Well, and it's kind of funny that they're arguing in the panic room. Yeah, so you're right. She runs out and shuts the door, locks them in. Now, Michelle,
yeah, what's the point of that?
How many panic room salesmen are panicking and worrying that this will cut into their sales?
Or maybe it'll make people think they need a panic room.
Not if you can get locked into it by the guy robbing your house.
That would be so bad. It would really be bad. Yeah, she goes out and locks them in. It's like, I don't think it works that way.
We got kind of a Huel situation here too, Michelle, because she leaves then without letting them out and goes downtown and has a drink at bar.
Well, the kids are in the house, surely.
Yeah, but they don't know they're in there. What are they going to do, hear them scuffling and screaming and scrabbling to get out?
I mean, can you hear somebody in a panic room? I don't know.
Is it unresolved? Soundproof?
I mean, it should be soundproof, right? I don't know.
Anyway, so Bar is where she ends up, the bar called Bar. Yep. And this is the de facto Helen Allison mini episode, again in reverse, that we talked about.
I told you last time, I thought Allison told her. What'd you think?
Allison told her what?
That she was there.
Oh, that she pushed by the way, him. I went and watched that, Michelle. And it turns out you are right. Allison did see her, but you didn't argue it very well. You didn't argue it right.
Oh, come on, Mike.
Because the argument isn't at the scene. At the scene, it is very fuzzy. Noah comes out of the car to the passenger side of the car.
And the interior light's on and Helen's screaming.
No, but you never see Helen.
And reaching for him.
Allison,
you see her arm.
I know, but the truth of it is, and as soon as I saw it, I remembered it all. But the truth comes out in court when Allison says, you got to, you know, you choose between her or me. And, you know, that's where it was clear. I told you that, too. It wasn't clear at the accident, though. It wasn't clear at all. He comes out. He could have been in the driver's side and come out the passenger side just because he didn't want to get out on the roadside.
But you can hear Helen. He's not going to climb over her to get out on that side.
You can't really hear Helen. You don't know anything about Helen.
You can absolutely hear her. Mike, okay.
It doesn't matter, so it's stupid to argue about it. But where were we?
I accept your apology.
Well, there was one other thing, too. Besides the court, there was one other thing. Oh, they go back to the wedding. They go back to the wedding and they slow dance and they talk about it. That's the proof. I mean, that I totally forgot about. So that would be, that's where you say, Mike, you're a fucking idiot. Because they went back to the wedding and slow danced and talked about what just happened.
Well, they didn't talk about Helen there, did they?
Yeah, they talked about what they were going to do next.
Yeah, I don't think they mentioned Helen because I looked for that in that. And they just talked about, you know, first of all, they didn't even really talk. They were just kind of mumbling in their shock and, you know, grief or whatever. And I don't think he mentioned Helen in that.
All right, let's go back and rewatch and argue next on 310.
Okay.
All right, so I made a comment here that's not really related to this episode or a specific scene in this episode, but I thought it was interesting how in life, Michelle, we decide to give prophet status to people, like advisor. Like, you're going to be an advisor to me in life. Like, who you listen to as a prophet or an advisor to you, who you trust. Mm-hmm. And Helen refuses to listen to her parents or to Vic or anyone else, but all of a sudden she grants Allison this role of the advisor and gives her the power to, like, impart this wisdom upon her.
Yeah, and yes. And the first time I watched that, I was like, there's no way. There's no way she's going to take any advice, any of this from Allison. But then the second time I watched it, I changed my mind because her, "you stole my husband" comment made me think that in her frame of mind, she's thinking, you stole my husband. You had something, offered something that I don't have, that I didn't have. And so you kind of have a leg up on me, and I need to listen to what you have to say. So I bought it the second time. It's really weird. It's really weird how I'll do that sometimes. And I completely get how people take different things from the show, because I do, just depending on when I watch it.
Well, that's kind of a false argument that people have in relationships too. Like, you stole my boyfriend, or you stole my husband. It's like, the husband had a say in this. Noah Absolutely. Had more of a say in it than Allison.
Well, right. And Noah's the one who made the commitment to Helen, not Allison. Allison, you know, it wasn't her commitment to break. But I would think, I mean, you know, if you had a girlfriend and some guy was able to woo her away or whatever, wouldn't you wonder? I mean, I know girls do, I think. I mean, most of the girls I've ever talked to about it do. You wonder, what does she have that I don't have? And so if they're going to talk to you about something, which I don't see how Helen talked to her after those first few comments anyway, but you would have to be curious about
maybe,
the
maybe
things she's
curious,
saying.
But but I wouldn't assign blame to the dude who stole the girlfriend. You know, it's the girlfriend who's, I don't know. There's a lot of people in this situation in life now, because there's a lot of people that get divorced now, and there's a lot of people that get separated and go out and start dating and meeting people, and they're still married. You don't get mad at the new guy because you're separated, and I know they weren't separated, and their situation is a little different, but in the world we live in, that is a real, it plays out in real life sometimes.
Well, yes. First of all, you and I disagree probably as strongly on relationships as we do on just about anything. And I really think we should probably do a podcast or something about that sometime, because it's so, you see things like polar opposite of the way I see things. But excuse me, but I do agree with you that you don't change who you're going to listen to based on something like that. And you don't blame that person when one of my daughters said it would have been somebody else. No, Jane said that. She's like, it would have been somebody else if it wasn't Allison. If it's true about Allison never loved him and all that kind of stuff. So
I think it's interesting, Michelle, that you think of one of our listeners as one of your daughters.
No, I just get them confused because we talk so much. Oh, and there's other people that have tweeted me, and I got to apologize. I have not even read all the tweets yet because my power went off last night in the middle of my watching this, and I only got Helen's side of it done. And I pulled up a couple of tweets as soon as the power went off, and I saw like some spoilers, and I didn't want to see that before I watched it. So I just had to put it down. I figured the power would come back on. The power didn't come back on until like 5:15 this morning. So I had no power last night, and we had like a big important thing that we had to go do today. And so it's just been crazy, and I've not had time to even get back to the tweets. So sorry.
All right. Well, let's go back to this bar scene. So
yeah,
Helen goes into the bar. Allison's there. Allison this time is the bar slithery slut fatale in Helen's memory.
So what do you think about her and how she looked in this?
Well, I'm not done with Allison yet. She's kind of open shirt. She's kind of got the sleepy bed hair. Her hair is all disheveled. She looks definitely sexy. She looks smart and sexy and down home. Like, if you met that girl in a country bar, she'd be the first one that you put your attention on.
A lot of makeup on and all that, yeah.
She's a little drunk. She's very friendly. She's smart. She's forward. She goes right up to Helen.
Right.
She's ordering Jamesons left and right. And she's vague mannerisms and way of... She's vague and mysterious. And just as a guy, I got to say, she was very interesting looking.
Okay.
But the Long Island iced teas, which are arguably, someone might argue, like more sophisticated of a drink between two women, are replaced by whiskey on the rocks.
Just, yeah, but Jameson's pretty good whiskey, isn't it?
Let's get to it. It's like no slow gin fizzes here. We're going to whiskey on the rocks, baby.
Right.
So they're getting down to brass tacks. And this is where Helen says, like you said, you stole my husband. And Allison just...
Yeah, but before that, Allison's like saying, how are the kids? Like you would ask somebody, you know, that like I would ask a girlfriend or something. How are the kids? You know? I mean, that's like a slap in the face.
Well, they're really, girlfriends. They're homies.
No, I don't think so. And Helen is like, okay. And then, and that Stacy, how old is she now? 10? You know, it's like, it was way too forward and way too familiar with Helen's kids for her to go up.
She's a couple Jamesons into it, probably.
I guess.
But, yeah, she says you stole my. She's more than that. She says you stole. Helen says you stole my husband, and Allison just kind of. I don't even remember what she says, but like, no biggie, didn't mean to. And what does it matter now? She's all flippant.
Right. Yeah. She's like, oh, okay, right.
And
then
she's
like, if it
helps you to believe it's my fault, that's cool. Go ahead and believe that. It's like, well, whatever, you know. And Helen remarks then, well, is anything your fault? And then she realizes that's kind of a mean thing to say, and then she starts to apologize. And then they get down to it, Michelle. This is where they really, these two talking is really entertaining. Allison says, Noah saw my recklessness as sort of freedom after Joni. And after having Joni, I've woken up. And I realized nothing lasts forever. We can only control our own choices and nobody else. We can only save ourselves.
Yeah, but that's just it. This is where I made these big notes. And I'm like, you know, the first time I watched it, and I'm like, you cannot tell me this is going to be what changes Helen's mind about everything. This wise wisdom of the mentally ill homewrecker who's in there. I was like really angry when I wrote that, obviously. But
who's the mentally ill? Allison's a mentally ill homewrecker?
Yeah.
Or Noah?
Well, Allison is who I was talking about. Because she's the one, because she's mentally ill. She just got out of the institution,
she's
right?
She's mentally ill.
She's mentally ill. She saw her. Yes, I mean, that's why she went. I mean, I'm not saying it like as a...
I know you're not, but I'm not agreeing. I think Noah's mentally ill. I don't think
Allison saw her daughter laying there dead when she fell off the horse when that wasn't what happened. She said, I'm not okay. I mean, she said that much.
I'm not going as far with Allison as I am with Noah. I'm not calling her.
Like, she checked herself in for 6 months. Maybe if Noah had checked himself in someplace for 6 months, then maybe he'd be better too. I mean, you know, like I said, but that's not even the point. The point is I cannot believe that that would suddenly change her mind about everything. You know, Allison saying this, you know, we can't save each other. We can only save ourselves and all that kind of stuff. I can't believe that at that point Helen would go, you know what? That's pretty smart. I think that's true. But she's looking at her like she might be thinking that at that moment.
I don't think... Okay, maybe this is my measuring stick. I don't think seeing Allison makes me wonder, okay, here's a mentally ill person I need to be pretty careful around because I don't know what she's going to do next. That I would definitely think about around Noah.
Yeah, but there's a big deal difference in someone who's mentally unstable and someone who's mentally unstable and dangerous because of it. I mean, you can be unstable and not be dangerous, I would think. And I don't think she's dangerous to maybe anybody except, you know, a child if she's having these delusions and flashbacks of them. I don't think she's like a danger to Helen, but I don't know, you know, but I think there's certainly degrees of it. And if you check yourself in someplace for 6 months, I don't think I'm stretching to call her mentally ill. I think I'm mean to call her that in relation to the wise wisdom of a mentally ill homewrecker. That was mean, but I don't think that it's a stretch because.
So when do you get cured from being so is she cured now?
No, because she just at the birthday party had the flash of Joni laying there dead. And she
so how do you get cured of being mentally ill?
Well, I don't know. I don't know, but I'm just saying she's shown us so many times.
No, but by your definition, you said, okay, she checked herself in for treatment, so she's always mentally ill. I don't think that's the case.
No, I didn't say that. I did not say that. I just said that I don't think it's a stretch. You know, she's not wrecking a home at the moment, but I think I can call her a home wrecker. But the mentally ill thing, I mean, she did check herself in.
So that's my point. I know you didn't say it. I'm saying it. She checked herself in for treatment. You're calling that mentally. So how do you shed that title of being mentally ill? How do you get, because you could always say the rest of her life, well, she once checked herself in for treatment, so she's a mentally ill person. When does she get free from, well, how does she unbecome mentally ill?
Well, I think if she had come back from that and she wasn't having the same things, then I don't know that I would have even thought of her in that way, you know? But, I mean, this is everything she admits. I mean, she's admitting mentally ill just means that you're not thinking clearly. You're not okay. And she admits that even to Helen in this. She's talking about Gabriel and how after that happened with Gabriel, she was reckless and stuff. I mean, that's not okay. And
well, I don't know. We're not going to ever get past this, so I'll just hang it up. But I mean, people do reckless stuff all the time. When you get fired, you go out and, you know, do something reckless just because you don't know what to do. You feel out of place, or you break up with somebody. You know, or you lose a death, you lose somebody.
Nobody's talking about a life situation that makes you behave negatively or in some way that's out of your norm. I'm talking about her seeing visions of her daughter lying dead when she's not there. I'm talking about visual hallucinations.
She was just bleeding a little out of the mouth.
And lying still when that wasn't the
she was told to lie still by the director, Michelle. Come on.
Okay.
All right, so anyway, they have this conversation. No one can control us. We can control our own choices. Nobody else can do that. We can only save ourselves, coming from Allison. And Helen says, I have something to tell you. And Allison says, oh, no, you don't. I already know what you're going to say because I was there. And Helen says, so that fucker confessed for fuck. She's like mad that Noah confessed for Allison and not
I told
Helen.
You I told you that's what he was doing, and I told you that it would mess her up, and she deserved to know that. She spilled it all to Vic, and I guess we'll get into it in a minute, but yeah, she finds out right there. She's like, I am such an idiot. That's all she's saying to Allison.
Yeah, this still strikes me as like way more important in the story than I think it would be in real life. I don't get it. I don't feel the impact as much as Helen seems to be feeling it here. Maybe that's why I didn't get it when you were saying it.
It's everything. It is everything. She could not move on because she felt like he did that for her. And if he did that for her, then he must love her, right? And so if he loves her, then, you know, she's going to maybe feel some kind of, you know, I don't know, I mean, obligation or something to stay with him as long as he loves her. And he must, because look what he did for her. And then right here, after 5 years, she finds out, oh, he didn't do that for her at all. And didn't even tell her. Didn't even have the balls to tell her. I hate that.
So Helen says, I'm an idiot. Let's go tell Cherry right now.
I know.
And Allison says, what good would that do? So I'm not in any way going to go tell Cherry anything.
Yeah, and I like how she says, Scotty was deeply troubled. And he was trying his best to hurt me. But I'm sorry for what happened to him. But there's no way I'm going to Cherry's house. But, you know, I don't know. Allison's pretty flip about everything. Helen asks her when she says, you stole my husband. She says, are you even sorry? And Allison's like, well, yeah, no. You know, I mean, she had a hand and breaking up this marriage.
But what does that matter at this point? Are you sorry? Are you even sorry? I kind of agree with Allison's flippant mentality. They're like, what good would... Okay, I'm sorry if that makes you feel better. She probably would have said that.
Yeah, that's not what good does we're it talking do, about, though, Mike. Because I mean, I guess whether she's actually sorry or not doesn't say anything except about her character. But the fact that Helen sees her own children suffer for what... Granted, Noah did, not Allison... Every day she lives with that, plus she lives with the guilt.
Well, and what Allison, Helen did, what she did herself.
Well, that's what I said. What she did, the guilt of what she
you
did.
You said what Noah did, not Allison. It's what Helen did.
No, it's what I'm talking about what Noah did because it's not what Allison did. I'm with you. Noah's the one who had the commitment to her. And Noah's the one who wronged her,
talking
not
about
Alice.
The accident and lying about it. Helen was the one who lied about it, no matter what happened.
Right. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about their whole lives. What I'm talking about is, was Allison sorry that she stole Noah? And then Allison goes, yeah, yes and no. You know, and you said, why does it matter? And I think it matters because Helen has watched her children suffer because of Noah's actions in leaving them. And... You know, combine that with her guilt over Noah going to prison for something she did. I mean, she's a mess. And she tells Allison, it matters to me. It deeply matters to me. Because now, you know, we talked about it last week where, you know, Allison had Helen laughing because Noah wasn't Joni's father. It's kind of like, I don't know. It's just, I don't really know how to put that. I'm just going to lay it there. I completely get it. I completely get why it was so vitally important to Helen. On the flip side, it broke up her marriage. And for what? You know, Allison's now saying she didn't even love Noah. That it was just this chance encounter. So if Allison and Noah did love one another and had a child together and they were, you know, married and everything, at least it would be for something, for love, you know, for something. And this just makes it for nothing, you know?
Yeah, but it's a false thing to worry about. There's no value in it. There's nothing that'll change about what the situation is by having her say, yeah, you're right. It was all my fault. I'm really sorry. So what? So what if she apologized? Doesn't change anything.
I don't think Helen was trying to get her to apologize. I just think that Helen was letting her know that it did matter to her, vitally mattered to her.
Okay. Well, that's fine for a Helen to express it, but that's about all that comes of it is her expression.
Well,
doesn't
right,
change
because-
anything.
Because Helen's a girl about it, and she cares about the emotional side of it. And Allison, that was a Freudian slip. Allison just has this like dude attitude about it, right? Just this kind of, yeah, whatever.
Well,
you know,
that's a convenient
yourself.
That's a convenient attitude too. It's not just a dude attitude. It's like, oh, what does it matter? Because when you're caught on something like that, it's the best escape is to say, look, whatever. If you want me to apologize, I'll apologize. But what's the difference?
Yeah, but Mike, life's not about escaping from it or coming out, you know, the easiest on the other side, right? I mean, isn't it about...
taking the hard road like you always do?
Not...
No, I'm just kidding. All right, we belabored this pretty heavy. So it's something important to Helen, less important to Allison. It's either less important to her for real or she's just deflecting and trying to get out of it by acting flippant about it or a little
drunk.
I just
don't think Allison cares about much of anything.
Maybe that might be her personality that they're portraying.
Because we talked about that. Remember I said she wanted Noah till she got Noah. She, you know, wanted Joni. And then she got Joni, and then she left Joni with Noah, and then she came back and had Joni, and then she left Joni again, granted, for a good reason, but then she comes back, she wants Joni, and then she takes a job in New Jersey.
All right, I mean, like, well, there's more lies in this episode that are I think, that are being uncovered here that are going to need to be dealt with. This isn't all just Allison being, or Helen being a victim, and everything around her is, you know, she's right and everything else around her is wrong. She does some stuff that's not, that I think Helen lies in this episode.
Really? Okay.
So we'll talk about that. But interesting with the bartender. I like the bartender because the bartender, obviously the bookend anchor to what happened last time, this bartender says, weird night to Helen, and last time she said it, he said it to Allison.
I know. Yeah, I made a note of that.
So that was an interesting anchor. But Michelle, I'd love to know more about Sarah Treem's motivations and writing and her writing and her directing and stuff, especially with alcohol, because she seems to really know alcohol really well. She seemed pretty young in that interview, if you listen to that podcast where she's speaking and talking. But she knows all about the family dynamics of drinking. Like, she has alcohol in family settings a lot. She knows about this bartender. A bartender would say that to you. Weird night. Like, it's my job as, you know, the amateur analyst psychologist in the role of a bartender to ask my customers that. It's just really interesting to me that she has this story connecting to alcohol so much.
That's interesting. I haven't even given that a second thought, but yeah. I mean,
the whole crime is because they were drinking and driving. Vic's been drinking left and right all over the place. Oscar's a drunk. Scotty was a drunk. Cole was drinking all the time. Everybody important has some relationship. Who's the other guy? Who's the rich guy? Max. You know, they're all kind of woven into this theme of the story with alcohol. I don't know. It's just interesting to me that Sarah Treem injects that so much into this plot.
That's a really, really good point. Yeah.
So Helen goes to Cherry's, sits outside in the car and wrestles with the decision, but decides not to tell her anything, just drives back to New York City. Meanwhile, back in the panic room, Margaret and Bruce are playing chess.
Gasping for air by this point because they haven't got the ventilation job.
It's not airtight. It's, I don't know, it's a stupid plot line.
It was just a joke.
Meanwhile, back in Breaking Bad, Huel is sitting in the hotel room wondering when Hank is going to come back. Anyway, so she waits for Vic outside his work and confesses to him, catches him off guard, confesses to him on the sidewalk outside his work.
Yep.
So Vic is, Michelle, is the cold counter to let's stretch everything out beyond its shelf life. He's Mr. Cutoff. I'm cutting this off. What are you doing here? I gotta get to work.
Well, that gallbladder wasn't gonna take itself out, so.
Well, but he is. I'm done with you. He's not like, hey, let's talk in 2 hours. He's like, what are you doing here? He's like mean to her. You know, you don't have the right to talk to me anymore. But anyway, she tells him the truth, and
but not just the truth, right? I mean, she does tell him the truth, but she also goes into this thing that I thought was really interesting where she says that she, you know, has always told herself she was a good person and she put others above herself and all that. And it's just a lie. That's not who she is.
Well, yeah, I don't even want to, I misspoke. I don't even want to say she tells him the truth. She tells him the facts or some of the facts.
Okay.
Because she says, like, I did this because I was driving because Noah was drunk. So that's kind of a truth, but it's really, you know, I mean, Noah, I don't know. They were both drunk, right?
They
were.
That was
a quasi truth.
Yeah, but that is why she was driving. I mean, yeah, she didn't say we were both drunk and he talked me into driving, but that's just wordy. You know, and she did drive. She wanted him to drive. She's like, I can't drive. You drive. And he's like, well, I can't drive. You know, and then he gets in the car and he starts driving. And then he has one of those,
She doesn't tell Vic that. And we're talking about Vic and Helen here, though. She just says, I took over because Noah was drunk. And then that fucked up my life. So I thought maybe he should suffer because I took over for him because he was drunk. And he needs to pay me back. He should suffer. That's why I let
him. Not because he was drunk. Because he had an affair.
Well.
And he hurt me.
Yeah, but the driving the car fucked up her life. Well, maybe. They both did, really. The fucking up the life was the affair. But it was also the the whole accident thing and the
She was definitely talking about the affair.
Okay.
Because she goes into this thing here where she says, because Vic says, well, why did you lie? And she's like, well, because I was afraid to go to prison, and he had had the affair, and he had already lost the children, and I didn't want them to suffer. And then she goes, but mainly because I was a coward.
And that she wanted him to pay her back. Maybe right. Noah should pay me back some for everything he did to me.
Right.
And that's why I let him in, not because I loved him. I think that's a lie, Michelle. I think she did. I think she did love him.
Well, she did love him. But look, love to me, anyway, is not this it's there or it's gone.
Oh,
right?
Geez.
Well, it's not, Mike. There's like it's like multi-layered, right? And you can still feel, personally, I'm going to say this, and this is not necessarily what everybody thinks, but it's definitely my way of thinking. I think if you ever love somebody, really love somebody, that you always love somebody. And I think that if you don't love somebody anymore, that you never did love them. That's what I think. So I think that, of course, she loved him.
Well,
but
okay.
But I don't think that she, I think, like what I said earlier, that I think she felt guilt and appreciation because he had like fallen on the sword for her. And so she thought he must still love her. So she owed him this. And, you know, this, do you love him? I mean, I can't imagine somebody ever asking me that about somebody that I've ever loved. Because, yeah, if I ever love somebody, then yes, there's love in my heart for that person. And if somebody wants me not to have that, then they don't want me.
But they're talking about romantic love. They're talking about the romantic love here, not the like, I'll always love my daughter. It's romance here they're talking about.
Yeah, but it's not romance. He didn't say, do you still feel romance for Noah? You know, he wants her not to love him, and I think
he wants her to not be romantically attracted to him. Love, not. I mean, I agree. If he's the father of her kids, she's always going to feel some sort of a strong feeling. Call it love, call it whatever. But Vic's worried about her loving. Like, do you still love this guy? Like, are you still potentially relationship bound with this guy?
Right, You're right about that, but I don't think she was. I think that she just still had that entanglement with him, and I feel like everything she said here, they could not have worded it any better for me to explain her actions over the course of this that have been driving me crazy.
Well,
you know?
I'm a guy and I'm looking at Vic, and Vic's stepping back into trouble with Helen here. Because Vic,
I don't think so.
Okay, well, you said what you said. No, I'm going to say what I say. That she says, well, that's why I let him in, not because I loved him. That is, to me, was a lie. I think she did romantically still love him and still hoped that he could come back. And she fucked him the night before all this. She loves the guy still. And then she finds out this bad stuff about him. I mean, she wants Noah back as her husband and her family to stay intact because she's romantically still in love with him.
I don't think she is anymore. I think you're wrong now.
Right. And then she, and the other side of it, that means that she's not, in the morning, she wasn't in love with Vic anymore. And now in the afternoon, she is. Vic is a fool if he believes she can switch like that.
Why would that mean she's not in love with Vic? Because she's having this conflict and turmoil.
She let him leave. She pretty much told him, you leaving is okay, and I'm going to deal with what's left until all this new information came.
I mean, I disagree.
I know you disagree.
She begged him to stay. She begged him to stay. Please don't do this. You know, she's like, I can fix this. I know I've messed this up, but I can fix this. I mean,
all right, well,
what's she gonna do? Take him down to her panic room?
You want to predict in season 4 if Helen and Vic will be together?
I bet they will.
All right, I bet they don't. I bet they won't.
Okay. Okay. What are we gonna bet?
I don't know. The trip to the lobster roll.
I'm allergic to shellfish.
You can't see, like, Michelle, that's, you're totally, you can't even go into the lobster roll, and here you are trying to do a podcast about this show. In real life, you could not even walk into the restaurant, or you'd break out in hives and have an emergency pen stuck in you.
You're just changing this. That's right. That's right. You're just changing the subject because you don't want to make a serious bet.
I could sit at the lobster roll bar for hours. No problems.
Well, some people are luckier than others.
Well, all right. I'll take that as an apology.
Okay, go ahead.
So Michelle, Helen says, I don't know what to do. And as soon as she rallies again, this is the end of my argument in the previous 5 minutes. She says to him, she's desperate. I don't know what to do. But I think as soon as she rallies again, Vic's going to be history again. Because she's leaning on Vic. She really doesn't know what to do now.
No way. You are reading it so wrong. She's not leaning on him. She realized, now this is my take, she realized what she had with him. And she's looking at us so happy. Oh, my heart just like swole like the Grinch. You know, she was looking at him with that look as he turned to walk away. And I was so glad that he looked back at her.
All right. Well, the analogy to the fairy tale cartoon is perfect because that's, I think, what it is.
No, Mike. I mean, why? Why would it necessarily be that? I mean, can she
you
not like
him? You said his
like
heart
him?
Swole like the Grinch and made the
no,
analogy.
No, I said mine did. My heart did.
Oh, okay. Well, for all of his heroic standoffishness, Vic is sucked back in and says, okay, I'll find you after work.
Yep. And she's looking at him. What about the way she looks at him?
That doesn't mean you're such a sap, Michelle. Well, she, like, she's in love. I'm so in love with you, Dr. Vic.
I think she realized, and I think that was it. And I think that's where it's going to go.
He probably didn't even have surgery. He's going into workout or something. Or going to surgical practice. All right. Part two, Noah.
Yep.
Now, Michelle, correct me if I'm wrong. Don't be shy like you usually are to correct me. But
okay.
We've never seen Gunther in any other filter other than Noah's view of him.
No, I don't. Maybe Helen. Maybe Helen was in the prison talking to... Yeah, I think Helen was in the prison. Definitely. She was in the prison talking to Noah, and Gunther was like standing over up against a wall. But that's all we saw when she had the black eye.
Was that in Helen's version or Noah's version?
I'm pretty sure that was Helen's version, because that was when Noah was telling her he didn't want her to come back.
And what did he do in that scene that we can argue
Not
about?
A thing.
Yeah, he was just kind of standing there looking around, right?
Yeah.
Doing his job, essentially.
Right. Right.
All right, so my premise is that Noah's the only way that we've seen Gunther, and we've been forced to believe what we see, but it's only been through one perspective, Noah's.
Right. And did you doubt it? Because, I mean, I was, like, angry for Noah with what he has went through at the hands of Gunther.
Yeah. Right?
And I don't think he went through anything.
Well, he went through a shitty, going to prison can't be fun, but it looks like that was all concocted in Noah's whatever, instable mind or whatever's going on in his mind.
Yep.
So Noah goes back. Noah gets off the train like a stealth ninja with his hood on. Now, first thing I thought, Michelle, he would be pulled over like Rambo by the nearest cop with any cop on duty with Noah looking like that. Would pull this dude over. Hey, dude, what's up? What can you know? Can I help you find some place? Just check him out because he looks so suspicious with that hood on.
Sorry, I don't know what happened. My computer just absolutely went blank. And me, being the brain surgeon genius that I am today, kept talking, thinking you could still hear me. So,
with the computer off.
Yeah, it was completely black. It flashed this like blue screen of death, and then went black. And I'm talking. I'm thinking, I'll worry about that later.
It's that good Tennessee power.
It is. Our power's fine. Jeez.
Well, why'd your computer shut off?
That's my, well, last night the power kept going off and on and off and on, and I think it messed up something. I'm going to have to get in here and try to fix it. So.
Anyway, right, well, I was talking about Noah getting off the train and getting pulled over like John Rambo, that he wouldn't last 10 minutes in a town like that type of town. The nearest cop would pull him over just because he looks like he's up to trouble.
With the hood on his, you know, he's like got the hood on, he's walking around like that. Yeah, he absolutely looked menacing.
So he's tailing the wife, or he finds the wife, even though it's John Rambo's wife, or what's his name? Gunther's wife is a hair salon.
Right.
Hairstylist. So he goes to the salon and asks for a haircut, but he doesn't know which girl to ask, so he asks the first girl he sees, and it's the wrong one, and finds right. the other one, and the other one starts calling him sweetheart. Can't do it now, sweetheart. I gotta go fix dinner.
Yep.
But my friend does a great haircut. So that was kind of funny. But I think, and then he walks over, kind of follows her.
Yeah, he followed her home. Is there no better way to find out where Gunther lives? I mean, does he not have the internet or, you know, anything? That was horrifying. That was absolutely horrifying, the way he was following her like that.
We could hear the train sound in the back. So all the Gunther trigger sounds and settings are kicking in here.
Right.
He knocks on her door. I thought it was weird they knocked on the door. I thought he was going to do something stealth mode. But he walks right up to the door and knocks on it. And some kid answers with some kind of a problem. Autistic or deaf
looked like
or
that.
Something.
No, he looked like he was autistic.
So the kid struggles a little bit. The wife sees Noah again with the creepy hood and unkempt look and goes kind of nuts.
Well, yeah, because she's like, you know, John, this man followed me home. I mean, she had just left work. It's horrifying.
So she's afraid of Noah. And then Gunther handles it totally calmly, Michelle. First of all, he calms the kid down with really like a lot of love and patience and being a really good dad to this little kid.
Yeah, and he, like, did you notice that he kind of motions for Noah just to kind of hang there? I mean, he didn't freak out. He didn't run to the door. He didn't make anything worse. He first handled his child and, you know, kind of motioned for Noah, kind of looks at him like, okay, you just wait. And he handled that. I thought it was great.
This writing, this is very clever writing, actually, this Gunther scene, because they make him, let's just go through it. So kind of calms the kid down and tells Noah to hold on, comes outside and talks to him. He also is wearing glasses, which makes every villain seem nicer when they have glasses on.
Okay,
so
yeah.
He's wearing glasses. So Noah starts to accuse him, and Gunther just refutes it all. But he kind of understands Noah's look and his demeanor and his craziness. Like, oh boy, here's this guy, been seeing him in jail for the last 3 years, and here's this kind of unstable mental guy that here he is at my door. I got to deal with this.
Right.
And then they have already given Gunther the credentials to deal with it by dealing with the kid with the problem. Different problem, obviously, but that he's got patience and experience and calmness with, you know, kind of an unsettling situation with the autistic kid. That he's good. He's probably really good at his job as a prison guard and not the kind of guy that we all thought he was.
No. Was it shocking to you?
Well, I was waiting for the flip side. I was waiting for him to flip out and just be the Gunther that we thought he was.
I was too. I was waiting for him to say all that and then him get the door closed behind him or get Noah in a bar like he was trying to do and then turn into the old Gunther, right? And that's not, I don't believe that's who he was at all. I think Gunther was nothing but a way for Noah to torture himself. And use somebody else to do it. The only question, the only thing is, so what happened to his shoulder?
Well, we're jumping kind of ahead. So I also thought about Gunther. It was interesting that they gave Gunther real life problems. That he wasn't just some bland prison guard guy with a good, you know, he's a good patient prison guard. But he's like a normal guy with battles and struggles. And he's got a wife and a kid with problems. And he's got to deal with day-to-day stuff. And now on top of all that, he's got this kooky prisoner, ex-prisoner on his doorstep.
Right.
But Gunther doesn't blame Noah and say, hey, get the fuck out of here. I got my own problems. He's kind to him. And it reminded me of that saying. Have you ever heard that saying? Be kind to everyone, for each of us has a great battle that we're fighting.
Yes.
So
yes,
that kind of reminded me of that scenario. That's kind of true, that you don't know that much about the other person when they cut you off or they're rude to you or whatever. But they're all full of problems and greatness and kindness and evil, and every life is complicated. It's not simple.
Right.
So Noah pulls a knife on him, the knife, the famous fish store knife. And Gunther does the "I'm about to kick your ass" move of pulling, taking off the glasses and putting them in his pocket. And I thought, okay, here he goes. He's going to be the Gunther. But then he just kind of ninjas him into submission and doesn't hurt him and just tells him, "I'm going to let you go now and you're going to walk away and get help."
Right. Right. Gunther's confused about why he's there. You can read that on his face. And Noah is accusing him of following him and showing up at his house. And Noah's saying, you know, "Why do you want to kill me?" And Gunther's genuinely confused. And then he realizes, okay, he's unstable.
And well, I think Gunther knows he's unstable already from his time in jail. And he's dealing with it like he probably had to deal with Noah when he was in jail.
I don't even think Gunther dealt with Noah much when he was in jail, any more than he dealt with anybody else. I mean, I don't really know how that works as far as how much the guards actually know and interact with prisoners in a situation like that. And it's probably even situational. But I got the feeling that he, you know, knew him, but that was all.
I think there's more. Because when he sees Noah outside and he's like, "Okay, hey, hang on, don't go away." And he kind of closes the door and deals with his kid and his wife. He knows he's not just another prisoner on his door. "Hey, what the fuck do you want?" He knows he's like the prisoner that's had some trouble, some mental trouble. Like, I'm going to help this guy.
Okay,
I think that was the hint they were trying to give us there. But he does let him go. And Noah says, "Show me the scar in your hand." And there's no scar in his hand.
Right, so, because Noah had stabbed him the night before in his vision.
So it's interesting that in the Noah point of view, in his most insane moment, he's having the most clarity. He's giving us a window to the Gunther. Gunther's kind of a graceful figure. So we get a clear view of Gunther in Noah's most insane moment.
Yeah, that's right.
And then so Noah runs away, or a scene of him running, and reminded me that he was a runner. He was always running in the beginning. He's like an athlete. He was a runner.
Right.
And he's running as both himself and as a boy in the scene.
Right. With somebody who we assume is his father calling him down through that pathway in the woods toward that water, that pond.
He gets on the train again and he falls asleep and he dreams of jail again.
Yep.
And his version of Gunther, the hard ass guard, returns. Gunther's got his manuscript of his story, and Noah's all tortured by not having had water for the 2 days, like he claimed earlier.
Right.
Gunther reads from the manuscript to him.
Yeah, I don't think... I started to question whether Noah didn't have water, even, right? Because Gunther's not like that in this one. He's like, "Man, I brought you breakfast this morning. You can't go 2 days without water. That would you'd be dead." And then Noah's saying, "Well, I drank my urine." And Gunther's like, "What?" You know, so even in Noah's mind, because I don't think Gunther was ever there in that cell. And even in his mind, he's questioning the legitimacy of the story he's telling himself, I think.
Yeah, it never happened the way Noah told us, or the story told us earlier. Noah never had 2 days of no water. And this brutality by Gunther. That was all in his head.
Right. So I don't think Gunther was ever even in the cell at this point. Do you?
I don't know.
I don't think Gunther was in the cell. I don't think Gunther was reading this story to him. I don't think any of that happened, because we see Noah attack him and Gunther's not there. He's suddenly on the other side of the cell, smoking a cigarette in a cell. And then Noah attacks him over there, and he's gone again. I don't think he was ever there.
Well, in Noah's version, Gunther's reading the manuscript to him in the cell. Right. And it's a thinly veiled story of him and Gunther in real life, which would be, in reality, Michelle, would be a really stupid thing to do, to write a story about your life with the prison being the setting. Like, you could, who knows who's going to inspect your stuff and read it and give you grief for all the stuff you're saying in your story, or, okay, now we're cleaning everything out of your cell. We're going over it with a fine tooth comb. And they read that, and the one guard finds it. Would be really stupid to write the stuff down where somebody
could
read it.
Yeah, but Noah's saying he didn't even. Noah's saying, "Where did that come from? I didn't write that." So that was kind of confusing to me. What do you think about that? Do you think that he actually wrote it
I don't know.
Or he didn't write it.
I didn't even think about that. I'm just saying, I guess it occurred to me that it would be stupid to write stuff down. But I don't know. Maybe he didn't. Maybe it was all just like imagined.
That's what I'm leaning toward, is that the whole thing was imagined. Now, Jack Hunter story? Remember, that was the story that he had started writing. And we see that again at the very end of this episode, the story or some kind of manuscript.
Yeah, a shorter version of it.
Much shorter. So I don't know.
All right. So they have an interesting little conversation, the ghost Gunther and Noah.
Right.
So they go back and forth about the pills and how they got taken by Mama. And Gunther kind of teases him about the difference of mercy and murder. He's taunting him and teasing him in a mean, very mean way. And because he's reading a story, and Noah claims that he's making up the part about that in the story, that he never wrote it, that Gunther, you must have wrote that.
Right.
And then Gunther says, "What did you do?" And Noah says, "I took the fall for my wife because I had an affair." And Gunther says, and this is, of course, this conversation with Noah and Gunther is a conversation in real life between Noah and his own psyche.
Yes, I agree.
Gunther is another part of him that he's trying to resolve this problem with. So Gunther says, the thing is, you needed to have an affair to save a girl because you murdered your mother. That's what you did, right? And then they show them again in the cell, Michelle, and I think the answer to his shoulder is he smashes his own shoulder into the wall. He's wrestling with Ghost Gunther, but he probably just ran into the wall himself.
Okay, that's really good point, that it could have happened like that. Yeah, because he was literally like throwing himself into the wall. But what did you think about the story? Because that's kind of what we were talking about, you know, that you and I really kind of hit that. Because it was about, I mean, that story that Gunther was reading him, you know, he had the bus ticket in his back pocket, but his mother was there, half in this world, half out, and he had to convince her, essentially, that she wanted to kill herself by giving her sugar pills so she would feel more pain and think the end. I mean, just like horrific kind of stuff.
Okay, well, I thought about this, Michelle, and with Noah and his mother, and I think there's a spectrum of truth, and I think there's five options that might have happened.
Okay.
So here they are, as far as I can tell, from benign to evil. Number one, Noah did nothing, and she just died. She just died of whatever she was sick from.
I don't think that happened.
Okay. Number two, it was assisted suicide that left Noah sad. Number three, it was assisted suicide that left Noah gleeful and happy and free. Number four, it was unassisted murder by tricking her, like it was murder, by tricking her into taking the pills. Or number five, that was number four. Number five, it was a murder by forcing her to take the pills. I think it was somewhere on that spectrum is the truth.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Gunther even said it, you know, that they both kind of agreed on what happened. Noah kind of crushed up the pills for her to take, but was it mercy or was it murder?
But he might, what if he crushed up the pills for her to take just by putting them in her yogurt and didn't tell her? That's one thing that might have happened. He might have crushed them up in front of her and said, "This really makes me sad, Mom, but if it's going to help you escape your pain, I'll help you do this." That's one. He may have done it and just said in front of her and said, "Eat this yogurt," and forced her to. We don't know which of those it was.
No, but it was, I think it was much more, I don't think it was as benign as he had made it sound. Because he was saying, what if he accidentally tripped over her vent cord?
Yeah, that didn't happen.
No, but that kind of stuff, that's what he was writing out, you know, in this fictitious whatever. So he was planning ways to relieve himself of the responsibility. And I think then, as we see at the end, that it's Noah's father chasing him saying, "What did you do?" I, I think it was more than, maybe it wasn't more than, and maybe the guilt just got to him. But I mean, you know, he's saying that he left things on TV about, things about, I think, assisted suicide, I think is what they said.
Yeah, hinting to her that,
right,
this is what you should do, Mom. It's the best thing. It's like, that's, right, to me, that was the most evil of all, like hinting, like leaving little clues, like, here's a way out for you for this, Mom. Like coaching her.
And then giving her sugar pills. So she thinks that her disease is farther along than it actually is.
Yeah, that's manipulation. That's really, really the worst.
And I think that's what he did. That's what I think he did based on what they told us.
So Ghost Gunther reads, you know, the fake part of Noah's mind reads. I'm calling him Goa now, Gunther and Noah. But we both agree about what happened, but we disagree about the meaning of the act. So Noah is admitting to us pretty much that he did kill her, but we disagree about the meaning of the act. So did he do it to be helpful to his mother, or did he do it to be helpful to himself? What do you think?
I think that he did it the way this story was reading out. He was thinking about ways for her to die so he could escape. Now, whether he actually followed through with those, like, you know, I mean, giving her sugar pills so she'd think her disease was further advanced and this horrible stuff, it sounds like that's what he did. I don't think it has to be mutually exclusive that he would be sad that she's gone, but happy he gets to go if it had happened in another way. But I think that he really, I mean, this is his mother. And I think that he really helped convince, manipulate her along. And I think that's what he was living with.
So this is also interesting in the light of Allison's statement that we only control our own actions. Nobody else can control our actions, because if he's manipulating his mother, he's stealing agency from his mother to make this decision by manipulating her. So he is making a decision for his mother, which is really bad. That's worse than killing somebody, is stealing their ability to make a decision about themselves. Their own future or whatever, tricking them. I think he tricks his mother.
Right. I agree. I think so too. And, you know, Jack breathes a sigh of relief as he watches his mother swallow the medication. And that's what made Noah, you know, knock the manuscript from fake Gunther's hands. So.
Ghost Gunther, please, Michelle.
I'm sorry. Ghost Gunther's hands.
So back on the train, Noah freaks out and shouting, "Where did you go? Where did you?" Like, it seemed odd to me that the people didn't look at him like he was cuckoo. He just seemed kind of like left alone. He was left alone on that train.
Yeah.
All right, he goes to the apartment in New Jersey where he was at the college where the stabbing happened.
But wasn't that interesting? Let's just go back just one second, where he said that he thought he could save her, and that was his reason for going for Allison. I know you kind of touched on that, but wasn't that interesting? It was like his psyche had done this terrible thing to his mother in his mind, in whatever way it happened, and now he finds this girl, and he wants to save her, kind of to make up for what he didn't do before.
I don't like this whole wagon of psychology that these characters are all towing behind themselves now. I like the fact that Noah had a really good marriage and he was distracted from it by a hot girl, and he made a very complicated, or maybe it's simple, he made a simple decision that was a catastrophic one to the whole setting, to all the people. I like that story. I don't like this, all this, oh, I did this to help the poor girl that had the baby die, that needed somebody. It's too much baggage.
Yeah, but the other story is a season, and I don't know that they could keep that going for four seasons.
Yeah,
like,
that's
like
true.
We're doing here. But other than that, I agree, but you can't have it both ways. You can't say everybody's complicated and you don't really know what somebody else has going on. I think that's what they've done, is They've just gotten into the complication. Nobody has like a great marriage and then just decides to have an affair because some hot girl comes along. If you value what you have, you know, you're not going to do that. I mean, you don't see mothers doing that with their kids. It's not like some other kid comes along and they go, oh, I like this other kid better. I'm going to adopt this kid and get rid of mine. I mean, it doesn't happen like that. So if you value what you have, you're not going to do that unless you got some other, like, no, behind the scenes things working.
It also doesn't play out because Noah doesn't help Allison. He screws Allison. Like, they have a sexual relationship, but he's with her for his pleasure, not just because he was helping her, because he's guilty about his mother. For that to be a buried part of his psyche that causes him to do all this is way too, it's way too much of a stretch for me.
That's a good point.
And plus, what happened to Noah the last couple years? He's been a normal, pretty normal guy, and now all of a sudden he's like a psychotic lunatic.
Yeah.
His mother was still murdered by him in the first season and the second season.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, I completely agree with everything you just said.
Well, that's all I care about is you agreeing with me. So he goes to his apartment in New Jersey. The crime scene tape is still around the borders of the door. They got to clean that shit up. Unless it still is a crime scene. And he's.
I don't know. They cleaned out the sink. Somebody cleaned up the sink.
It looked like that door's been opened a few times because the tape was around the border of the door.
Yeah.
Just take it down. You don't want that on your door. Bringing a girl home and you got crime scene tape on your door?
Yeah, that's probably not the, you know, most romantic thing going on.
So he finds a manuscript, a short version of the manuscript.
Right.
He's lurking around in the dark with the knife again and the flickering lights, just like the first scene. It's the replica of the stabbing night.
Yeah.
The window's open. It's like, oh, somebody snuck in through the window and the jazz music comes on. And then he is kind of crazy because he sees the water running and then the sink's clean and the sink's got dishes and you hear the door creaking open.
Yeah, and he sees himself in the mirror, and not in the mirror, but in the window reflection. Then he sees Gunther.
Yeah.
And then he sees himself, and yeah.
He washes blood away from his hand, but there's no wound on it.
Yeah.
Then he's running again. It's him again. It's another boy. It's the younger boy again, maybe younger version of himself. And his dad's voice says, "What did you do, son?"
Yep.
And he picks up the knife, and watches himself and Gunther change in the reflection, and he stabs himself in the neck.
Yeah, you were right. Man, you got that like first thing. I don't think so. I didn't think so. I bought it, and you didn't. So kudos to you on that.
So, Michelle, what's new? I mean, what's the point? Where? What? So now what? So we got a kooky Noah, who's all of a sudden is full-blown insane. And you claim Allison's insane. I think Allison's just kind of stressed because of all the shit that's happened to her.
No, Allison's either a sociopath or she's not okay. Even by her own stories.
Oh, she's okay. All right. All right, okay. Michelle. So I told you, and here's a hint to what I guess they're going to do. I told you in last episode that Noah goes to Paris. He's going to go to Paris and see Frenchie LaRue.
Yep, you're right.
So that's the solution. Is he's gonna absolve all of his other problems by helping her solve her problems?
I don't think so. Okay, I think that this was like, I think last week, since Cole and Louisa are more distant characters, is particularly in this season, we got their conclusion. We got their decision last week. Cole said he's staying with Louisa, and he watched Allison walk away. This week, I think we got Helen's conclusion, and we got Noah's, the beginning of his conclusion. I think Noah, the reason he fell to the floor in the kitchen and started sobbing was because he realized that all of this had just been in his mind and that he needed some help. Now, what I'm picturing is Helen goes on with her life and she's with Vic. Noah And we may see this next time, although we may not see Helen at all. I don't know. Noah goes to Paris and because he's better, because he's resolved whatever. I don't know how much more of Cole and Louisa we're even going to see. Hopefully next season, I guess. But
well, all of these relationships have lies undermining their foundations. Cole and Louisa do. Vic and Helen do, even if you don't agree with me. I think they do.
And what lies? Oh, about her not loving Noah.
I think that's...
That's overcomable.
And now Noah's jumping on the plane to go to Paris to see Juliet. Who knows what he's going to claim with her, that the reason he's there.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a time hop in the next episode. I don't know how much, but, you know, I don't think it's going to be like an immediate thing. And we do see Juliet and we see Noah and he looks really good. He doesn't look, you know, addicted and crazy like he does this time. And, then we see that he runs into Whitney in Paris. Did you see that?
No, I didn't. I don't know that much about what happens in Paris.
Yeah, he runs into a fur cat. The furry cat evidently has some kind of show there, and Whitney's there. And remember, she had talked about it, I think, with Helen and Vic when they came to dinner about them going to somewhere. Anyway, and I think I saw fur cat hit Whitney, like smack her in the face, and then Noah go after him. So I'm not sure what that has to do with... you know, with this story, but there's that. And then we see Juliet asks him if he thinks he's some kind of expert on affairs since he wrote a book. So, you know, all may not be smooth sailing on that, you know, love ocean either, but we'll see, I guess.
You know, Michelle, we're watching a soap opera.
I know,
I heard,
Mike.
Read some review of this series that it's not as fun as a soap opera because there's less fun stuff happening than what happens. I've never watched a soap opera before, so I don't know that much about them. But and it's not really a drama because it's, I guess you'd have to call it a drama, but it's a soap opera.
It is a soap opera. It really is. I was actually thinking about that. I didn't read it anywhere. I was thinking about it just the other day. I was thinking how it's really turned into like this soap opera. I mean, yeah, I agree. And if it didn't have the way they tell the story, Noah's version, Helen's version, Allison's version, Cole's version, I don't think it would be nearly as interesting, and I don't think it would have made it this far.
Well, they're going to have trouble in season 4 keeping all the orbits of all these people interwoven, because eventually you go through all this shit. You know, if he's not going to see Allison, he's never going to cross her path in real life, if you really think about it. He's never going to cross the path of Cole and Louisa. He's never going to, I mean, him going to Paris and crossing a path, even if Furcat and what's-her-name are in a show, the odds of you crossing paths with somebody in a huge city like that are just, like, monumentally against it happening.
Right. So, yeah, I don't know how they're going to do it either.
And Helen and Vic, I mean, he's going to see the kids. Probably they have to interact. But, I mean, do they just let these people tail off and that's it?
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. I'm curious as to what kind of time jump we end up doing for season 4.
So we're probably done with Gunther pretty much, huh? Gunther's played his part in the reveal that Noah's just flunked out mentally.
That's my guess is that Gunther is done. And and you know, bravo. I mean, what a great character that turned out being.
Yeah, Brandon, what's his name? Brandon,
I don't know.
He's in The Mummy. Frasier, yep. Brandon Frasier.
Yeah.
He was a really good actor in this one. His being kind and gentle versus being the dick that we know him as was really like two different people.
I know. This last episode just really made me a huge fan.
All right, Michelle, how do people tweet you if they've got any answers to your multiple questions?
I desperately need my questions answered. At Michelle from TN.
And I'm at Scathing Tweet, so that's it till 3:10, Michelle, and we're done for another season of The Affair.
Woohoo! We're done.
All right, okay. See you next week.
See you then.